In the past 2 weeks, I've looked at two deadly D's, doubt and defeat. And today we look at the third one, discouragement. And the title of the sermon is, What Do You Do When You Feel Like Giving Up? And I'm sure every one of you has at times felt like giving up at some stage in your life. Some of us have an off day. Some of us have an off month. Some of us have a bad year. And you would all know that feeling of, why bother? Why keep going? I mean, the most deeply I've felt that in recent months, as you know, is when we failed to elect the Archbishop of Melbourne. So it's good to come to a passage and get some encouragement to keep going when we feel like giving up. But first of all, I want to look at this little story from Nehemiah and find out what are some potential causes for this feeling. You'll remember the story. Jerusalem has been destroyed. The city is in ruins. God's people have been scattered. Then God says to Nehemiah, go back and start rebuilding. And he starts by trying to rebuild the wall. And we drop into the story when they've begun that process, but the locals, who are no friends of the Jews, are insulting them and try and stop this project. So there are some principles here about what causes discouragement, and also then we'll look at some causes or some antidotes to that discouragement, things that would encourage us. Let me read verses 10 and 11 of chapter 4. If you've got a Bible there, it's on page 344. Verses 10 and 11. The strength of the labourers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. Also, our enemies said, before they know it or see it, we'll be right there among them and kill them and put an end to the work. So three suggestions for causes for discouragement. The first one is in the beginning of verse 10 there. The strength of the labourers is giving out. A major cause of discouragement, the first F, is fatigue. People just wear out. These people were working hard, under pressure, with little time to relax. Does that sound like a common description of our present world? And it's noticeable that their strength is giving out. It's very hard, I think, to remain spiritually up when you're physically down. It's very hard to do that. When I get tired, so my son woke me at 5:30 the other night for some reason, and I was tired all the next day. When I get tired, I get grumpy. It's very hard to maintain an even emotional and spiritual balance when you're tired. Look at verse 6. It tells you how far into this project they'd got. They'd got halfway. We'd rebuilt the wall until it reached half its height. And that's when the fatigue set in. That's a very common experience, isn't it? Because when you start something new project with new ideas, you have new energy. Oh, I could clean out the kitchen today. And then halfway through it, you think, why did I bother starting this? This is ridiculous. Think of some of the long, complex things that you've ever done in your life. Has anyone ever built a house or renovated a house? Have you ever tried to get a solution, a satisfactory solution from any of the following? A government office, a financial institution, a legal institution, a car sale yard or something like that. Any of you ever done any study that lasted longer than 6 months? And you start to think, why did I do this? Think of our church here and being involved in ministry here. You might start with a small group and your first meeting is very exciting. You don't know each other terribly well. And you go, this is going to be great. 6 months later, oh, I'm not sure I like all these people. Or you start by serving in a leadership team and you think, this is the way we're going to do it. This is how we're going to run this group. 6 months later, you find not everyone thinks the same as you. So it's very easy to start with really good intentions and all the energy and then get tired and get discouraged. So that's one cause, fatigue. Second cause, look at the next bit of verse 10. There is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. What he's talking about there is builders' rubble. The walls have been destroyed, and the builders are having to walk over all the remains of the existing walls and buildings in order to try and build the new wall. And he's saying there's so much of this stuff. And if you just think of our modern sort of situation of doing a house renovation, you know, broken bricks and mortar and offcuts of wood and cement bags and dust. And all you want is to make a cup of tea, but the kitchen is a bomb site. You think, oh dear, it's so frustrating. So the second cause of discouragement is frustration. You get frustrated and discouraged by the stuff that builds up and gets in your road and stops you doing the main things that you want to do. I'll give you an example of what happens for me. When I'm writing and writing sermons or talks, my mind is going, and I pull books off the shelf and I put them down on my desk. And then I think, oh, I did a course on that book of the Bible once in college. I'll go and get my lecture notes out. And I look in my filing cabinet and I find other things I've filed in there. And I pull them out and I start looking at them and I put them on my desk. And then I mention it to a few people around church and they say, I've got something on that, I'll send it to you. So I end up with their resources on my desk as well, which might be MP3s and CDs. And then I look at the internet and I see that someone else worthy has written something fantastic. And then I get a book catalogue from Koorong and it's got a book just on this one, I better get that. Before I know it, my desk is covered. But worse than that, my mind is cluttered. The rubble is built up in my mind and I have to be really careful then that the rubble, the clutter, doesn't stop me doing the main thing, which is writing something. You might have examples in your life of rubble. I think for everybody, email is a potential rubble. That for many people, the start of the day means clearing out an email box, and unless you're very careful and disciplined, that can take a lot of time away from actually doing what you're supposed to be doing or whatever it is you would like to be doing. That can become a great cause of frustration. I'd be very interested to hear any other suggestions from you about the rubble you know that you have in your mind and in your life that frustrates you and makes you feel like, takes me so long to get to the main thing that I have to do. So that's a third cause of discouragement, frustration. Second cause, frustration. The third cause, verse 11. Our enemies said, before they see us, we'll be right there amongst them and we'll kill them and we'll put an end to their work. Now, these enemies are fairly significant. You see in verse 7, they include unsavoury characters like Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod. It's intriguing, isn't it? Not everybody is enthusiastic about God's people getting on with God's business. And so this generates in the people of Judah, notice verse 12, the third cause of discouragement, fear. They are fearful they are about to be attacked. And the people who feel the fear are not exactly the ones doing the building. And they communicate their fear to the builders. We're going to get attacked. See how fear can become like a disease. It's contagious. So you might be sitting here this morning feeling like, you know, you're like a soldier or someone who is a sports person. You just get on with it and you go for it. You never feel fear, never have a second thought. But if there are enough people around you whispering and saying, this is going to be disastrous, don't do that, it starts to have an effect on you. You start to have second thoughts. So the people are spreading this fear. Now you have your own fears perhaps this morning. Fear of embarrassment, fear of failure, fear of standing out. Some people even fear success, fearing to be perfect, fearing that you can't handle pressure, fearing other people is a very common one, maybe spiritual fears involved. And fear stops us pressing on. It's sometimes when you read what's going on in relationships and the world of employment, sometimes fear causes people to do very strange things, like resign from their job very quickly. Run from a relationship, leave a church. That can sometimes be caused like fear. Sometimes I think about this job and what I'm doing, and I think about all the complications of this job, and it does make me feel uneasy, and I think it would be easier and emotionally safer for me to do a different job. And so when I look in the classifieds on the weekend, there's a little thing goes on in my head going, I could do that job. That wouldn't be anywhere near as hard as the job I do now. I could do that. Maybe sometimes you have in your mind little messages that are telling you about fear. So there are just three suggestions about what discourages us. Fear, frustration and fatigue. Just pause a moment. Let those sit before your eyes. See if any of those today or recently have caused you to feel discouraged. And then let's turn back to God's word and see what we can do about any of these. The first potential source of encouragement is very simple. The first R, if you're writing down notes on the back of contact there, is rest. Rest your body. Notice the first cause of discouragement was simply fatigue. The antidote is very simple, rest. When you read the story, you see that Nehemiah breaks them up. Some of them work, some of them guard. They get times when they're not on the front line, when they have rest. It's amazing how a good night's sleep makes all the difference. You'll find this extraordinary, I think, I find I am less grumpy when I've slept well. I don't know what the correlation is, but Arch Hart, who is a psychologist theologian at Fuller Seminary in LA, or he might have retired by now, I'm not sure, when he was in Melbourne, he was drawing a very strong connection between people's physical makeup, you know, how much rest you've had, and their emotional and spiritual state. If you're permanently tired, it is very difficult to remain spiritually strong. When God rests, in Genesis 2, it's not because he's tired. What he's doing is he's putting into the whole of the universe, the whole of our human makeup, a very important principle, which is we're not made to work all the time. We're not made to be under stress all the time. My great breakthrough in understanding Genesis when we did our series on Genesis was to realize the high point of Genesis chapter 1 and that beginning of chapter 2 is not the creation of man and woman. The high point is the seventh day when God rests with his creation. The whole point of that is that what we are made to be like is to be people who are at rest with our Creator. And we will experience that only at the end of time, forever. But the Sabbath idea is a little foretaste of that every 7 days we are to give ourselves time to be spiritually recharged and renewed. Psalm 3 verse 5 says, I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. So if you're here this morning and feeling a bit discouraged about anything, maybe the most spiritual thing you can do is go and have a good night's sleep, or get some rest, or have a holiday. That might be what you need, and it may be that then you're physically and emotionally able to face whatever it is and feel a new lease of life about it. Let's have a look at the second possibility from verse 13. When Nehemiah had seen that the people had got discouraged, he reorganized them. It says in verse 13, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, their spears and their bows. So the second R here is reorganize your life. Reorganize your life. Nehemiah didn't give up. He reorganized the people, set them up in families to guard. He had a new idea and a new plan. When we get discouraged, we're going in a certain direction and we then feel we're not getting where we'd like to go, sometimes, and particularly with Christians, sometimes we might think that's God's message that we're going the wrong way. It may be. You'd have to pray about that. Another possibility is You're going the right way, but you're going around it the wrong way. And you might need to reorganise how you're doing it. I'll give you an example. In our Building for Mission project here, I started that in about 2001, and I led the charge largely at the time. So what that meant was I had to run a lot of meetings, do a lot of discussion, deal with architects, establish sort of structures, start the whole process in talking with the diocese, the local council, raising money, da-da-da-da, on and on and on it went. I realised after a while, and talked about this with the wardens, that I couldn't keep going running that in the way that we'd just sort of, it had been established. I went to a conference, Christian Management Association conference, saw a possible way to restructure how we did that, came back, talked about that with the leaders here, and out of that came the Building for Mission project team in the middle of 2004. That meant we could keep the project going and it didn't rely on me. We were still doing the right thing, but if we'd kept going the way we were going, I would have gone pop and the thing might have stopped. Now, I tell you this because just on Saturday, I received news from Doug Mitchell, who is the project leader, that the local council have not approved our application. Our application has been unsuccessful, our planning application. He told me that on Saturday morning in the office there, and I said to him, all right, I'm going to go in and finish my sermon on what to do when you're feeling discouraged, which I'd largely done, but I now had to just tidy that up. So we are facing another stage where we can go either, are we going in the wrong direction and we might need to pray, or are we going in the right direction but we've hit another obstacle and we need to rethink, reorganise. But we will keep going. It may be that for you this morning, there are other things that you need to reorganise. Maybe if you've got financial problems, you might need to reorganise your budget. If you've got time problems, you might need to reorganise your diary. If you've got too much clutter in your life, you might need to reorganise your garage or what's under your bed or in your spare cupboards, etc. And if you're carrying the load on your own, if you're feeling very lonely about things, it may be you need to reorganise your relationships. Let me explain that one a bit more. Notice that Nehemiah arranged the people in families. He put them together in groups to get this thing done. That's a little indication that we're not to be lone rangers, I think, that we need each other. And in the New Testament, time after time, it says, love one another, serve one another, pray for one another, encourage one another. And if you remember back to me launching our Peace Pastoral Care model, Peace Pastoral Care is all about us helping one another. The first E of peace is encourage one another. So maybe you need to reorganise your relationships so that you have good, positive, life-enriching Christian relationships if you're feeling a bit discouraged and alone. Now, the third possible way of staying encouraged. Look at verse 14. After I, that's Nehemiah, looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles and the officials and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. No prizes for the third R here. Remember the Lord. My theory is that when we get discouraged, and this happens to me, when we get discouraged, this is what happens. Even with the best peripheral vision, the best spiritual insight, the best sort of trust of God, what happens is the problem starts to come like this. And the blinkers go on and all you can see is the problem. And it's very hard to look at life and see other things when there's this problem that's right in your face. And that's what's discouraging you. Remembering the Lord, I think, has two elements that helps remove the blinkers. One is remembering God's goodness to you in the past. It could be very spiritually helpful to you to take a piece of paper and write down God's blessings to you. Count your blessings. Go through and write them up. Count them. That would be one thing, to remember God's goodness to you in the past. The other is to remember that God is with you now. Emmanuel, God is with us, one of Jesus' names. God says he will never leave us or forsake us. Deuteronomy 31, verse 8. The Lord goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid and do not be discouraged. Remember the footprints poster? Encourages us to realise we're not on our own, that God is with us. So I think if you remember that God has been good to you in the past and that you remember that God is with you today, you're more likely to be encouraged that God's going to go with you tomorrow into that meeting, into that discussion, into that ministry situation. That's why we need to keep coming to church and keep sharing our lives with people in small groups, keep reading the Bible, so that we keep remembering God and remembering to trust him. The last R, resist the discouragement. Resist the discouragement. Nehemiah says in verse 14, don't be afraid, remember the Lord is great and awesome, and then look at this verb, fight. Fight for your brothers and your sisters and your mums and your dads and your homes. Don't give in. Fight. Resist. Now, we're not in a physical fight, even with the local city council. It's not a physical fight. It's not. We're in a spiritual fight. And a lot of the stuff that comes at us will have spiritual elements to it. And some of that will come from Satan. Satan loves to discourage Christians. James and Peter in the New Testament both say, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Resist the devil and stand firm in your faith. Paul tells us, put on your armour and stand firm in your faith. Use the spiritual weaponry that God gives us. Don't give in. Sometimes you will hear voices in your head, or you'll have these little records that will go on. If you're anything like me, you might be better than me, I don't know. It'll go like this. Peter, nobody's going to listen to you. Nobody's going to turn up. You're no good. You're not going to make one bit of difference. You're hopeless. You haven't got a hope of doing this. You ever have those little messages going on in your head? Those are all lies. Lies of the enemy who accuses you, when the message should be, you're a son or daughter of the living God. Stand firm in your faith. An example of how deep this can go is there was a group here meeting during the week and they had a speaker coming to speak to them. A strong Christian lady, very spiritually alert and aware, knows about spiritual warfare and prayer and very solid. She was coming to speak. She was driving for a half an hour or so to come here. While she was driving here to come and be the speaker, all through the drive in her head was going, you're wasting your time. You're wasting their time. You're not going to do anything useful at that group. She said she could not break herself from that, even though she knew what was going on. And it wasn't until she walked into our foyer and one of the ladies in that group said something to her encouraging, that it was like the cloud lifted. That's how serious and deep it can be. Even in strong Christians, you can feel discouraged by the enemy. So resist, fight. Don't let discouragement master you. Rest your body, reorganise your life, remember the Lord and resist. By the way, in case you hadn't realised, this whole little series I'm doing is to encourage you. Today is quite directly on encouragement, but my whole point is to try and encourage people. And I've been really pleased at the feedback I've had on Sundays and then via email of people who've felt encouraged and they've told me. So I've then been encouraged. It's a little example of sowing and reaping. As I've tried to encourage you, others have encouraged me. And I got this little bit of encouragement back via email from Helen Petering during the week. She wrote this to a couple of us who are preachers to encourage us, and it's entitled, Why Go to Church? And it's a person writing, saying, a churchgoer wrote a letter to the editor of a newspaper and complained that it made no sense to go to church every Sunday. "I've gone to church for 30 years now," he wrote, "and in that time I've heard something like 3,000 sermons, but for the life of me I can't remember a single one of them. So I think I'm wasting my time and the pastors are wasting theirs by giving sermons at all. Yours sincerely." This started a real controversy in the letters to the editor section of that paper, much to the delight of the editor. Probably increased circulation. It went on for weeks until someone wrote this clincher: "I've been married for 30 years now. In that time, my wife has cooked some 32,000 meals. But for the life of me, I cannot recall the entire menu for a single one of those meals." And I don't think he's meaning any disrespect at all there. "But I do know this. They all nourished me and gave me the strength I needed to do my work that day. If my wife had not given me these meals, I would be physically dead today. Likewise, if I had not gone to church for nourishment, I would be spiritually dead today." The last little editorial comment is, "When you are down to nothing, God is up to something." Thank God for our physical and our spiritual nourishment. You might want to jot this note down. When Satan is knocking at your door, simply say, "Jesus, could you get that for me?" Dear God, we thank you that even when we feel discouraged, that you are still with us. You go with us today and you'll go with us into tomorrow. That you give us your Holy Spirit to guide us. That you will help us to reorganize our lives. You will give us rest and that you will sustain us. Please give each person here your wisdom to know what to do with today's message, so that whatever rubble and roadblocks and discouragements are in their life, you by your Spirit will encourage them in body, soul, mind and spirit, that they might be strengthened and be hopeful and optimistic. And we thank you for this message in Jesus' name. Amen.